It's nearly 3 o'clock, and I'm Ann Fuller, your host for Juno Afternoon on KTOO-FM. This is Wednesday, and we'll find out about this Saturday's Coffee and Collections presentation on the settling of the Mendenhall Valley with Jim Garrity. Find out about Midwinter Vocal Festival. We'll get an update on the activities of the Juno Community Foundation, and also an update on activities at Eagle Crest. Those things, Writer's Almanac, music, and more. Wednesday at 3 on K2FM. If you miss a Juno Afternoon, we record it and put it on the website. The weather today, it's a winter storm warning.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Cherokee Nation is under a state of emergency after a winter storm dumped snow, ice, and sleet in Oklahoma. As Kirk Gortney with KGOU reports, the tribe's concerned frigid temperatures could put people at risk.
Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Bill John Baker declared the state of emergency in all the northeastern Oklahoma counties, clearing the way for the government to disperse emergency funds to assist tribal citizens. The move is also the first step toward seeking federal disaster assistance. The tribe will use its money to provide help with food or water, utilities, shelter, or emergency transportation. On Monday, the Cherokee Nation transported elder citizens who were shut in by ice and snow to dialysis treatments. Chief Baker says the tribe is the lifeline for many tribal elders during the dangerous and potentially life-threatening emergency. Baker also praised Cherokee Nation employees who braved the elements to provide critical services for Cherokee citizens. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
The Environmental Protection Agency has proposed the Wind River Reservation should be its own state for the purpose of monitoring air quality. Tribes have been waiting on the decision for a few years. As Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhorov reports, the state's governor is not happy with the decision.
The decision made under the Clean Air Act will allow the Northern Arapaho and Eastern Shoshone tribes to apply for grants to support air monitoring programs, but it doesn't give the tribes regulatory powers. As part of the decision, the EPA had to determine what constitutes the exterior boundaries of the Wind River Reservation. And although the state of Wyoming disagrees, the federal agency found that the city of Riverton is within reservation borders. Mark Howell, lobbyist for the Northern Arapaho tribe, says that has consequences beyond just air monitoring.
That obviously has wide and varied implications. Now, as part of this process, the tribes have specifically asked federal government not to run headlong into implementing this determination, specifically with regard to things like criminal jurisdiction, and the tribes want to be good friends with their neighbors.
Wyoming Governor Matt Mead issued a statement saying, quote, "It is outrageous to me that a regulatory agency has proposed changing jurisdictional boundaries established by history and the courts." Mead has asked the Attorney General to challenge the decision. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhorov.
American Indians and Alaska Natives have higher rates of flu-related complications, including death, than non-natives, according to health professionals. Health workers across the country are working to get more Native people vaccinated. From Albuquerque, Tristan Autone reports on one such effort.
If you've had your flu shot, this scene may be familiar. Your health professional puts on a rubber glove, opens a styrofoam container, pulls a vial from a box, opens a clean, pre-wrapped needle, and injects this year's influenza vaccine into your arm.
That was easy. Now I'm going to go cry in a corner.
Jennifer Silva is the first flu shot of the day. She says she's doing it for her family.
So I can stay healthy and be able to take care of my three kids so they don't get sick. So I don't get sick, so they don't get sick.
Tyra Wittenborn is with Kaufman & Associates, a company contracted by the Centers for Disease Control to set up flu clinics like this one here in Albuquerque. She says she hopes more Native people will get the shot this year.
If they get the flu shot, they're going to protect themselves. If they have a chronic illness and they get sick, they could actually protect themselves by getting the flu shot and making sure that they stay healthy and strong.
Wittenborn says people who want to get the flu shot can go to the CDC's website to find free or low-cost providers. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
Red Fox James headed an effort to establish a national holiday recognizing Native Americans. In December 1915, he presented endorsements from 24 state governments to the White House for a day to honor Native people. The Blackfoot man rode horseback from state to state to generate support. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation is accepting art for the Alaska Native Art Auction, February 20th, 2014 in Anchorage, Alaska. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event to buy art. Proceeds benefit National Native News. Learn more at knba.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hi, this is Shelley Owens. If you enjoyed the 39th Alaska Folk Festival, you'll want to tune in to Friends and Neighbors this Wednesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. for highlights of the 2013 festival. That's highlights from the 2013 Alaska Folk Festival this Wednesday night at 7 p.m.
Well, hello. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Ann Fuller. That music is from what's going to play on Friends and Neighbors on KRNN tonight, locally produced music and a radio show. With us in the studio today is Margie Hamburger from the City Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an event on Saturday morning. And I think you're calling it Coffee and Collections?
Yeah, Coffee and Collections is the series that we have in the kind of fall, winter, and early spring for our community. Series of presentations on history and culture in Juneau. And so this Saturday's presentation is the settling of the Mendenhall Valley with a very popular speaker, Jim Garrity, who's an incredible guy who people turn out in droves to hear him, so come early and get a seat.
Yes, that's good advice, because this is an excellent researcher and speaking about very local history.
Right, right. Well, there's not much known, or there's things known. Let's put it the other way. There's things known, but they're all in little bits of pieces. The way that Jim described it to me when I was chatting with him today was it's just like a huge puzzle, and a puzzle where you have to find where the pieces are even. And so that's the kind of stuff that he does, is going out and finding the pieces and trying to put them together into a picture that helps those of us who, you know, don't know how to do that or don't have the time can learn, because there's not much documented in one place that you can find out what's the history of the Mendenhall Valley up to. I guess he's going to take us up to about World War II. And he also collects incredible photos, many of which, you know, we probably haven't seen, but he gets them all kinds of sources. He makes all kinds of connections with people who have their own personal family photos, and he gets a hold of that, and he gets, where does he say things? Yeah, personal stuff, historians' collections, city, state, forest service, archives, even shops on eBay.
And really?
Often, mm-hmm, and can find things there that then he adds. So he's going to have, I don't know, somewhere between 50 and 100 photos to show us to help us tell that story.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. So this is certainly not just the history of famous people, but more the history of based on a place.
Mm-hmm.
And when you said that, of course, the Forest Service has control of some of the land there, and so they would have their own records.
Right.
So it's great to know that Jim has gone out and dug through various things and then just asked the people with their memories.
Right, and then he does very excellent research. So he was even telling me a story about how he got one version of a story that happened out in that area, and then later on he was relaying that story to someone else who said, no, that's not the way it happened. And this was somebody who lived through that period and had some family ties here, and they told him another story, another version of the story, which then he went back and fact-checked through a third source, which confirmed this gentleman's story, not the newspaper accounting of the story. So he's very thorough, and we'll go into as much detail as people like, and people often like that, so there'll definitely be time for questions and conversation so people can learn about that area.
All right. So this is Saturday morning, 10:30 at the City Museum.
Correct.
Up by the State Office Building.
Mm-hmm.
And while I think it's wonderful to learn about the settling of the Mendenhall Valley, also the research and the story gathering, Jim Garrity's a wonderful resource for us here in our community.
Right, right. And he's very generous about sharing how he does that kind of stuff. And just to get all the details about the program, so 10:30 to noon, and I was happy to hear you play the Heritage Coffee plug, because Heritage Coffee is our sponsor, and they will be hot, delicious coffee, and it's the program is free of charge.
Well, that's wonderful to get those details about this very Saturday at the City Museum. What else is going on at the City Museum?
I want to put a plug for our gift shop. So if people are holiday shopping, we've got a lot of cool things, particularly Juno memorabilia and so forth. So stop by, and also some works of local artists. And then coming up in January, we have a really exciting exhibit. I'm really excited about it. It's called Ordinary Things, Extraordinary Tales. And this is our first go-round, as far as I know, of a community-curated exhibition. And we've got 13 guest curators who choose utilitarian objects from our collection and have done personal responses, writing, and other kinds of responses to those objects. And so the objects, and they're written, or some are not all written, some are poems and cartoons and storytelling in response to that. So it's going to be a really, really fun show, and I hope very inspiring for the community to think about the role that objects play in our lives.
Absolutely. So curators, I think of that as a title for a museum professional, but it's actually the role of selecting and then providing the interpretation for the objects. And so you went and asked people in Juneau.
Right, right. So we have 13 people. In this case, we kind of narrowed our focus to people in the arts community. So we have theater people and writers and visual artists and things of that nature. So so it's going to be a fun show, and that opens on January 3rd, and there'll be a reception, and it'll be up for that month as well. So
that's
come on Saturday, and then come back again in January.
Oh, well, of course we'll come to our local city museum. Thanks. That's Coffee and Collections, Saturday at 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, the speaker is Jim Garrity, and I had come to listen to him talk about most anything, but this time his subject is the settling of the Mendenhall Valley.
That's correct.
The history up to World War II.
Yep.
Great thing to listen to.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Could you, like, just picture me in, a leather teddy? Yeah, right. Hurt me. I'm sure, no way. He was, freaking me out. He called me a beastie. That was, his totally flip. He goes, bag your face, I'm sure.
Welcome back. This is Juno Afternoon, and Lena Simmons and Rosie Humphrey are in the studio. Hello, Lena.
Hi.
And you're here to talk about Midwinter Vocal Festival.
Yeah, it's our 25th year, so we're very excited. It's hard for me to imagine we've been doing this for 25 years, but we have, so we're going to celebrate this year.
And I believe that that means this is a workshop experience for vocalists.
This is a workshop experience for vocalists. 25 years ago, we had a couple of singers who decided that they would go up to the then new Fairbanks Fine Arts Summer Festival. And they sang in the big festival chorus there and took lessons with the conductor, whose name was Byron McGilvray, and just thought, well, let's ask him if he would come down and do a workshop for us. And all he can do is tell us no. And to their shock, he said yes and showed up. And we met at Northern Light Church, and there were 23 of us, little tiny group, you know. When we got up to sing the two pieces that we did, because we only could handle two pieces, you know, half the audience, you know, disappeared. But we had a great time and thought, well, what the heck, let's do it again next year. And then the next year, and then the next year, and then the next year.
25 years later.
Yes.
So that brings us up to 25 years. It's a tradition, but it's not just for the people. I mean, it's more than 23. Who is this open for?
This is open for anybody who wants to sing. There are three classes in which you can take part depending upon your own confidence level and your skill level and anything else that you may want to do. If you do all three, you're in for a long week. But, you know, we always do what we call group voice, and that's sort of like a beginner's class in which, you know, someone who's a shower singer or hasn't sung since grade school or just wants to explore what it is to produce good sound, you can come in and we'll tell you if you're a soprano or an alto or a tenor or a baritone and teach you how to stand and where you, and how to breathe and the posture that it takes to sing well and how you produce a good sound. And how you produce a good sound is the same technique for someone who sings classical music as it is for someone who sings bluegrass. I mean, it's all the same thing. So it doesn't matter what genre of music you like to sing. You know, this is a good class. Yeah. Then we always do festival chorus, and that's the no auditions needed. Just show up, pay your money, pick up the music, set in the area that your voice part is in, and sing. And then the third class is always different. We've done conductor's workshops, we've done sight singing, we've done music theory. The last couple of years we've been doing a performance class in which you come with a piece of music that you've memorized and you get up and we all get to sit back and critique you on how you do it. And then you have to perform in the final concert.
Wow. So you've suggested quite a range of experiences there.
There is quite a range.
That performance class sounds just terrifying right at the moment.
No, not terrifying.
It's not terrifying.
It's not terrifying. It's for the people who want to take the next step.
Exactly.
It's the next step.
Because, quite frankly, as a solo singer, no matter what kind of a solo you're doing, whether it's Mozart or whether it's something from Broadway, you got to get over the butterflies in the stomach and the throat clenching up and knowing what to do with your hands, because if it's memorized, you can't hold your music and that you can't have that as a crutch.
Mm-hmm.
So it's intended to help you get, you know, a little more comfortable with being on stage.
Absolutely. So there are these three different possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the general time frame for the whole festival?
We start
December 27th is the first day. And the classes run through the Saturday through the Friday of the next week through January 3rd. And then the concert where the festival chorus will be singing their pieces as well as the solo performers that did their workshop will happen on Saturday, January 4th at Thunder Mountain High School at 7:30 p.m. Yeah.
Okay, so for those of us who want to be in the audience, it's January 4th,
mm-hmm.
but audience is only half of this. There have to be performers.
Well, you know, you have to have someone to perform to. The audience is good. The singers are good, too. And it's a comfortable place, I think, to explore different genres of music, because we're doing everything from an arrangement of a traditional spiritual to Mozart. And, you know, some of it's going to be easier than other pieces. We're going to be singing a movement from Bernstein's Chichester Psalms. So we're going to be singing in a little Hebrew, which, you know, is going to be intimidating for some people when they first see it, I think. although Hebrew is not hard. It really flows off the tongue pretty well. But it's getting over the, German, you're used to German, and we're used to Latin, and some of us are used to Italian and whatever, but Hebrew, And so, there'll be ranges of things that are going to be pretty easy, and then there are going to be some things that are not quite as easy. But that's the whole workshop experience, is to sing music that you might not sing in another venue here in town.
Oh, it sounds like a great opportunity, and it's right here. Instead of traveling out, it's here in Juneau. And who is sponsoring this?
Juneau Lyric Opera.
Ah.
One of the persons who went to Fairbanks 25 years ago was Sandra Stratman, who at that point in time was chairman of the board, or at least vice chairman of the board, or she was on the board anyway. And so she just came back to the board and says, "We're doing this," and we've done it ever since. And one of the fun things is, for me anyway, because I've done all 20, well, we have done all 25 of them, is that we're going to sing the two pieces that we sang at the very first workshop.
Oh, now that's a nice thing to bring the tradition around.
Yeah.
And what are those?
It's the Kyrie from Schubert's Mass in G, which a lot of people have sung in high school, I think, and the Laudate Dominum from Mozart's Solemn Vespers. And when we did it 25 years ago, none of the sopranos felt that they could sing the big soprano solo, which now Kathleen Wayne often does. In fact, did it when we sang it at Gene Rogers' memorial service not too long ago. So then in town, tenor Stan Watson sang the big soprano solo. So, now we'll have a chance for the sopranos to actually do it. But it was a fun time, and I think it's been a fun time throughout the years. It's expanded. It's gotten bigger. We've added midsummer to it as well, and have spent the summertime being able to do a bigger work than we can do in the 10 days that we've got, basically, in the wintertime, because we've got to fit it in between Christmas and his going back to teaching. So you got to do it in his break. Right. And I think people enjoy it. I know I do. I learn something from every class I ever take, and I enjoy, we're going to be singing pieces I've never sung before in this workshop, and that's fun.
That sounds great. You were saying it's no auditions, all skill levels welcome, and that on the, I got to get these names right, the festival chorus is a big group singing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a performance class for soloists who are ready to challenge themselves. Can I say that?
Yes.
Okay.
That
is perfect.
And then there's group voice, and I really, Lena, you made the point that it's the basics of vocal production that will benefit
any genre singer. Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Well, that sounds great. The rehearsals start at the end of December, but we can register now?
You can register now. You can go on our website, www.junoopera.org, and look on how to register. Easiest way also is just to call 586-ARIA, which gets you me, and I'll take your payment over the phone.
All right. What a lovely phone number for the Lyric Opera, 586-ARIA. You guys, I don't know. You sound organized in this festival workshop. You figured out how to do it. 25th time.
The 25th time. So, it's we've bounced around all over the place. We're rehearsing at Holy Trinity. We're going to perform at Thunder Mountain this year. We've rehearsed and performed in Northern Light and Travel by the Lake and Resurrection Lutheran and the Jack. And so we've been at St. Paul's. We've been all over the place. So, we've gotten to learn all the halls in Juneau pretty well.
I think so. And I'm sure that other events and production companies in Juneau have benefited from what the singers have learned.
I think so. I really do. It really was a thought 25 years ago. It was the exception of university singers, which a lot of people couldn't afford to pay for to sing or take a whole semester, to do something, that people didn't have the opportunity to sing. And the oratorio choir had pretty much become defunct, and St. Paul singers weren't around anymore. And we needed some place for people to get a little singing opportunity and to develop a chorus, because every opera needs a chorus.
Is that something you've said before, Lena?
I might have been.
I think so.
I'm a devoted chorus singer, so every opera needs a chorus.
Needs a good chorus. Mm-hmm. Well, this sounds like a great opportunity. It's the Juno Lyric Opera, and the rehearsals and performance, it's that week, the last week of the year.
Mm-hmm. That's a cheerful thing to think about, putting on a schedule. Well, you know, at first we kind of thought, ooh, is anybody going to come out, you know, at this point in time? But over the years, people, you know, it's cold, it's dreary, you're a little depressed because Christmas is over, you know, you need something to pick up your spirits before the legislature comes, so it's a good time, you know.
Well, it sounds like a great opportunity. Let me just remind people that it's the Lyric Opera. Call 586-ARIA to register, and you have your choice of workshop sessions. Prices are reasonable. The rehearsal schedule picks up at that last week of December.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
Come sing.
Come sing. There's that invitation. It's open to everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In me you see a sinner, dancing is my crime. It seems a sin I've got to give in to syncopated time. It makes me lose my dignity, it makes me lose my poise. And some folks call it music, but my folks call it noise. I like music, old or new, but music makes me do the things I never should do. I like music, sweet or blue, but music makes me do the things I never should do. My self-control was something to brag about, now it's a gag about town. The things I do are never forgiven for just when I'm living them down. I hear music, then I'm through, for music makes me do the things I never should do. About town, the things I do are never forgiven, but just when I'm living them down. I hear music, then I'm through, for music makes me do the things I never should do.
Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 11th of December, 2013. It's the birthday of Grace Paley, New York City, 1922, daughter of Ukrainian Jews, settled in the Bronx, raised her own family in Greenwich Village, grew up speaking Russian, Yiddish, and English. She was fascinated by the New Yorkers she met in the parks and playgrounds and streets of her neighborhood, realized they had no place in the literature of the day, and so she wrote stories about them, 11 short stories in her first book, The Little Disturbances of Man. When someone would tell Grace Paley that they loved one of her stories, she would say, "What's wrong with the rest?" It's the birthday of the writer who said, "To write a poem, you must first create a pen that will write what you want to say, for better or worse. This is the work of a lifetime." Jim Harrison, born in Grayling, Michigan, 1937, had two accidents that changed his life. When he was 7, he was playing with a friend, and she accidentally cut him across the face, and he lost an eye, which set him apart from other kids, and he started spending more time in the woods. And then when he was in his 30s, he hurt his back hunting, had to spend months in bed, and started writing a novel, Wolf, a False Memoir. His first big success was Legends of the Fall, 1979, 3 novellas in one book. His latest collection of poems called Songs of Unreason, and a collection of his novellas, Brown Dog, will be coming out this month. And it's the birthday of the writer Thomas McGuane in Wyandotte, Michigan, 1939, author of The Sporting Club, other novels, short stories, books of nonfiction. Most recent novel is Driving on the Rim. Lives on a ranch in Montana, raises cutting horses, cattle. Thomas McGuane, who said, "Literature can carry the consciousness of human times and social life better than anyone else. Look at the movies of the 20s. Watch the Murrow broadcasts. You can't recognize any of the people. Now, read Fitzgerald, and that's it. That's the truth of the time. Somebody has to be committed to the idea of truth." Here's a poem for today by Jim Harrison, Cold Wind. "I like those old movies where tires and wheels run backwards on horse-drawn carriages pursued by Indians, or Model A's driven by thugs leaning out windows with Tommy guns ablaze. Of late, I feel a cold blue wind through my life and need to go backwards myself to the outback I once knew so well, where there were too many mosquitoes, black flies, curious bears, flowering berry trees of sugar plum and chokeberry, and where sodden and hot with salty sweat, I'd slide into a cold river and drift along until I floated against a warm sandbar, thinking of driving again the gravel back roads of America at 35 miles per hour in order to see the ditches and gullies, the birds in the fields, the mountains and rivers, the skies that hold our 10,000 generations of mothers in the clouds, waiting for us to fall back into their arms again." Cold Wind by Jim Harrison from his collection In Search of Small Gods, published by Copper Canyon Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Looking for a little holiday fun and stress relief? Check out the Jif Bar Dance Saturday, December 14th, 7:30 p.m. at St. Anne's Parish Hall downtown. Full Circle featuring Greg Berger, Mary DeSmet, and Doug Smith will provide live music, and Susie Kendig will call contra dances. It's the perfect way to exercise your smile muscles and add joy to the season. All dances are taught, so you don't need experience or a partner. Discounts for students and seniors, free for SOG and JV's Good Times Great Live Music at the Holiday Barn Dance.
Support comes from the Copper Whale Inn, located in downtown Anchorage, near the city's restaurants, galleries, museums, and business district. The Copper Whale Inn, with reservations online at copperwhale.com.
This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Ann Fuller, your host. The engineer is Jeff Brown. Want to remind you there's a film tonight at the Gold Town Theater. It's called Escape Fire, The Fight to Rescue American Healthcare. Documentary film followed by a panel discussion. And with me in the studio right now is the Youth Action Committee of the Juno Community Foundation. So I've got Samantha Heiersdorf, Morgan Spargo, and Haley O'Goy. And they're here to talk about a grant program and money available for community organizations. So, Samantha, what can you tell us about?
So, to start off, I'll let you guys know what YAC is. YAC is Youth Action Committee, and it is a group of teenagers, most of who go to JDHS, who are involved in the community and work to raise money and fundraise for a specific cause. And our cause this year is to promote post-secondary options after high school. So if your first option isn't college, then we want to show that there are other options to what you can do and, like, what other options there are, and just show, like, everything that's possible. And so we want to let everyone know that there are grant applications out there and that you can apply for these grant applications up to $3,000. And these are for any non-profit organizations that are somehow involved in post-secondary options after high school. And to apply for these applications, I'm going to hand it over to Haley.
Hi. So to get the grant application, you can go to the Juno Community Foundation website, which is www.junocf.org, and it tells you an overlook on just everything we ask for in the application, and you can find that on the very front home page, and those are going to be due January 6th, and I'm going to hand it back over to Morgan Spargo, and she can tell you a little bit about what we ask for on these applications.
Hi. So our main focus is for youth 8th grade through 12th grade, so primarily teenagers, young adults, and we would like to have a proven history as well as a specific and targeted use of the funds received, and funds will not be provided for travel, general operations, and other activities that don't directly and positively impact youth in Juneau. And as Samantha said, our grant request should not exceed $3,000, and we would just like to promote awareness for post-secondary options after high school for those who, again, are not looking for college as their first choice.
Excellent. So there's the overview that you have grant proposals. The applications are available now and due January 6th. I'd like to ask Samantha, how did the group decide on this particular focus?
So with last year's group, this was the theme we thought of, and I think we came about it by, we were talking about college fair, and we were talking about how they have a job fair at JDHS, and we were thinking about how most of our options after high school, from what we hear from teachers and parents, are college, but there are so many other great opportunities and options we have. Like, we can go into different, like, what is the word for it?
Commercial fishing.
Like, commercial fishing, different organizations, like, I know there's different
apprenticeships,
yeah, throughout Juneau that are offered.
Excellent. And there are opportunities in Juneau, and as you say, in Alaska, there's the AvTech up in Seward, which provides short-term vocational training courses, many of which only take a high school diploma to get into, and then prepare you for further training or immediate jobs, and yet, as you say, it's not emphasized as often as how to get into college and which college to choose.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So I see. The Youth Action Committee has had other themes in other years. I think I'm right on that.
Yes, I believe they've had many other themes in the past. I believe one year was possibly, I think they helped out with promoting Challenge Day, which was when they brought a bunch of people to Juneau and they worked on Challenge Day, like worked on like bullying and like bringing together our school. And I believe they also have done some work with possible eating disorders and other things that impact teens in our community.
Great. It does sound like an opportunity for teenagers to talk about issues of concern and problems within their own sphere. So this year's focus is on what's sometimes called tertiary education.
if secondary is high school, whatever comes next has to be tertiary.
Yeah.
And are you, so you said, I'd like you to go over the details again about who can apply. You're aiming it at nonprofit organizations?
Yeah, it's any nonprofit organization with a 501c3 status or local government entity. And then we're asking people that are working on projects or have things planned that could possibly help promote us and help work on that issue that we are kind of targeting towards.
I see. So I think I see that you have the idea there are people in Juneau doing interesting and useful things. You would like to shine some light on this particular aspect.
Yes.
It's great. Did I understand you've already done some fundraising? And so you guys have been responsible for creating these funds you can now give away?
Yes. Last year we presented many different presentations to businesses and different organizations around the city. And so with these funds, we are now able to go back and give these to our cause and our nonprofit organizations that would like the money.
All right. I think that's an impressive project to think of doing, and I'm glad you're involved in this part of the cycle, too. The Youth Action Committee, under the umbrella of the Juneau Community Foundation, how many people are on the entire committee?
I believe it's around 20 now. Yeah, we had a lot of new members join this year, which is really great to see.
And it's really nice that there was awareness spread about this, because I had no idea at the beginning of the year about the Youth Action Committee, and it sounds like a great way to give back to the community. And it's also nice because as high school students, we are helping other high school students as peers and as friends, and we think it's a really good way to just help the people of our school, definitely.
And address the problems that we are seeing being created in our community, and to be able to help and possibly prevent that is really nice, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. We've been listening to spokespeople for the Youth Action Committee, Samantha Heiersdorf, Morgan Spargo, and Haley O'Goy. They came into Juneau Afternoon to make sure that the whole Juneau community knows organizations may apply for grants up to $3,000. These will be grants for awareness activities about opportunities and options after graduating from high school. The applications are due January 6th, and so they've come in now to tell you how you can get ready to do that.
Well, it would be great on the application. There is a spot where you can apply your project and say what your project is. And when we get the applications back, we do interviews with these people. So it's not just paper applications and we think, oh, that sounds like a good project. We're just going to give them the money. We really like to interview these people one-on-one so we get a feel of what they are trying to do and, you know, really overlook their project and make sure that it's going to be something that's supporting our community and our cause.
All right. That's an excellent summation. And so thank you very much for coming in.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This is Bird Note. Every winter since 1900, birdwatchers have taken to the field in Christmas bird counts. This winter, between December 14th and January 5th, legions of volunteers will tally birds in more than 2,000 locations. In the U.S., birders will venture forth at the very extremes of the country's geographic reach. At Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, a few hardy souls will count birds in a kind of deep twilight, since the sun doesn't rise here at all for nearly 2 months between Thanksgiving and mid-January. Across 25 years of counts, Prudhoe Bay's census takers have seen from a handful to as many as 129 birds, every last one of them a common raven. Meanwhile, a Christmas bird count in the Dry Tortugas, at the southern tip of Florida, enters its 10th year. Here, birders slather on the sunscreen to count tropical seabirds like masked boobies and sooty terns, and wintering shorebirds like willets. And while there are no ravens to count on the dry tortugas, birders can take solace in colorful songbirds like these palm warblers. To find out more about joining a Christmas bird count near you, begin at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Tonight on 360 North, American Masters, John Muir in the New World, delves into the life of the Scottish immigrant remembered as the father of the environmental movement, with reenactments throughout the majestic landscapes he visited, from Wisconsin to the Sierra Nevada to the glaciers of Alaska. That's at 8, followed by Alaska Rainforest, the Tongass, at 9:30, and the Miller Center Forum at 10. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Join us December 12th for the launch of our new series, Writers Showcase. The program will be holiday-themed and include the works of Alaska authors read before a live studio audience. Think selected shorts Alaska style. Writers include Heather Lindy, Jeff Kirsch, Clint Farr, and Rockwell Kent. This program will be recorded for later broadcast on 360 North statewide TV and K2FM. This fun holiday show starts at 7 p.m. at K2 on December 12th and will be pay-as-you-can.
It's Juno afternoon, and I'm Ann Fuller, your Wednesday host. In the studio are people from Eagle Crest, Jeff Reclow and Matt Lillard. So, tell me what's going on with the voting.
The voting, the Ski Town Throwdown. You know, I've been a couple different places around town today, and that, I have to tell you, that is the talk of the town. That's what everybody is talking about. How are we doing? Are we going to win? What's happening? So today is the third day of voting, and we are in the finals for Powder Magazine's Ski Town Throwdown. We're up against Crested Butte, Colorado, and I'm sad to report that we are trailing Crested Butte by about 300 votes. So they are very community-orientated, just like Juno and Eagle Crest is. So they have been a tough competitor. But so we're just urging everybody, reminding everyone to vote every 24 hours. Get your friends, your family, your coworkers, call your aunt back east. Let's get everybody voting for Eagle Crest because we know it's an awesome community.
So this has been a community campaign, and I haven't heard of any dirty politics. It's just a voting occasion for the Ski Town Throwdown. And in honor of the last day of voting, there's an event tomorrow.
We do. We have an event called Rock the Vote 2, and this time we're doing it at the Hangar on the Wharf. It'll be from 7 o'clock till 10 o'clock tomorrow night. And it's a chance to come up, get all the voting stats. You can even vote. Again, this is a Facebook voting. Find out what's going on. There'll be some ski and snowboard ride flicks, some great prizes. And it's just a great chance for everybody to come out and celebrate the season, celebrate our new snow that we have, and hey, celebrate that we made it in Powder Magazine Ski Town Throwdown, and we're just very excited by that.
It sounds like a great gathering. That's at the Hangar on the Wharf on Thursday evening.
On Thursday. And you can find out all that information at skijuno.com. On all the information on Eagle Crest as well as the Ski Town Throwdown.
Excellent. And Matt, would you like to talk about snow and terrain?
Certainly. Well, based on where you are in Juneau, whether you're downtown here, it's a little bit mushy and slushy and rainy versus farther north out the road in the valley where I've been hearing they're getting more and more snow by the minute. We've certainly been getting our fair snow at Eagle Crest. And last reports, we're looking at about 10 to 12 inches at the base, 15 to 20 at the summit. So the snow we've all been waiting for appears to be arriving, and it's arriving in a hurry with more to come tonight into tomorrow. And if you look at the forecast going forward, it cools down, and we won't be getting as much snow, but certainly some more to add on top to it. So we opened last weekend on the Porcupine Chairlift, which was great for everybody to get out and make a couple turns and get a little bit of their ski legs under them. And we'll be meeting up tomorrow and Friday and looking at the snow and definitely opening some terrain. I certainly can't commit to what that's going to be yet. We have to see what falls and how it falls. But it's safe to say we'll be skiing on something more than Porcupine this weekend.
great news for the skiers.
Definitely, definitely. And one thing I'll say is, you know, everybody's really excited, you know, the town with the ski town throwdown and then getting more snow and opening more terrain. And with that excitement, staff is just as excited. We want to get out. We want to get as much of the mountain open as we can for the coming weekend. So there's a chance that we might have to close the mountain tomorrow to hiking and other things, and even Friday to get up there and do some avalanche mitigation, get some real mountain operations work done in order to open. And we'll be making those decisions over the next day or two. And I just want to make sure everybody either gives us a call at the mountain or checks at skijuno.com or our Facebook page to get those updates. Because I really want to let the staff do their jobs and get as much open as we possibly can for starting on Saturday and Sunday going forward.
Okay. So these next few days are a good time to make sure you know what's going on. And that's skijuno.com.
Skijuno.com, correct. Mm-hmm.
And I think there's still a big banner or block there for how to go vote, isn't there?
There is. You can find out how to vote there. Just click on the Ski Town Throwdown banner. You can also find us on Facebook, and we'll have the link on our Facebook page on how to vote. And you can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram.
This is my ski resort, my hometown ski resort, reaching out. So last weekend, the chairlift opened, one chairlift, Porcupine, and so the lodge has been open. Has ski school started yet?
We did. We did open ski school last weekend, and we had some great beginners come up and learn how to ski, and it'll be open again this weekend. So Jeffrey can certainly update more on that.
Yeah, the Porcupine chairlift is a great beginner terrain. The snow conditions are fabulous there, and we had some very happy folks learning how to ski and snowboard last weekend, and we've got reservations for this weekend. So if you're interested in that, want to find out more information, you can go again to our website at skijuno.com. Or call us at 790-2000, extension 211.
All right. Great to get those details. For Thursday evening, it's some time in town with
time in
friends
town.
And fun.
Yep, at the Hangar on the Wharf, Rock the Vote 2. We had Rock the Vote 1 was at the Red Dog Saloon, and it was great fun. And this is something where families can come, and it's for everybody of all ages. Come out, show your support for Eagle Crest. We just want to thank everybody for the huge community support on the rally we've seen through this whole competition. And it's very obvious that we aren't the only ones that strongly believe Eagle Crest is an amazing gem and a great part of the Juneau community.
It is a great part, and I thought it was interesting. It's good to remember that the weather you see at one spot in our borough is not the weather everywhere. And so looking out your window, you may, like me, have seen a whole lot of rain first thing this morning, but Eagle Crest is up high, a little bit higher. It's colder, and there is snow.
Definitely. This is one of those times where rain downtown means snow at Eagle Crest, and we're happy that's the case.
Well, that sounds great, and it's like winter's actually coming.
Winter is coming, and so we just want to remind everyone that winter is here. We are open, and get out the vote for Eagle Crest in the Ski Town Throwdown.
Okay, Ski Town Throwdown, that's every 24 hours online, and Rock the Vote 2 is Thursday evening downtown, and Saturday the mountain will be ready for us to come ski and play on.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much for coming in.
Great. Thanks for having us today.
Democracy Now! Is a national, daily, independent, award-winning news program hosted by Amy Goodman. Pioneering the largest public media collaboration in the U.S., Democracy Now! Provides access to people and perspectives rarely heard, including independent and international journalists and ordinary people from around the world who are directly affected by U.S. foreign policy. You can hear Democracy Now! Weeknights at 9 on KTOO News Juno.
This has been Juno Afternoon, Thursday, 3 o'clock. It's Juno Afternoon again on K2FM with Shona Strausser hosting. She'll talk with members of the Alaska String Band about their upcoming performances, talk with director Danny Anker about his film Icebound, premiering at the Goldtown Theater. Pam Nelson will offer news about this year's pet food drive, and Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. If you miss a Juno Afternoon, you can catch it and other local, statewide, national, and international news all at the website, k2.org. This is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 in AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, K2 is on GCI Cable. That's digital channel 871. We're also online at k2.org. Support for national programming on K2 comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. The winter storm warning is still in effect until 4 p.m. Thursday. The rest of today calls for snow, and it'll be getting colder. Tonight, snow accumulation 5 to 10 inches. Thursday, snow accumulation 4 to 8 inches. It's supposed to keep snowing, so stay warm. This is Ann Fuller for Juno Afternoon.